It's Martin Turner in 68. Your weekend companion keeps you up to date with news, news and music and comedy on NBC.
Moniker in 68. I'm your host, Ted Steele. In this half hour, we meet Will Rogers, Jr., and hear about his concern with the original inhabitants of this country, the American Indians. Let's begin with a free design and kites surf on. One of America's best-loved humorists. But many people may have forgotten that he was truly American, part Cherokee Indian, in fact. His son, Will Rogers, Jr., has always been keenly aware of it, and he's taken a great interest in the life of the Indians in this country. When he was in Washington recently, he was interviewed for Moniker by Betty Grobley, and he spoke about his Indian ancestry.
Now, my grandfather was quite a leader of the Cherokee Nation, and he was quite important in the history of the Cherokees and their relation to the state of Oklahoma when it was made into statehood. In fact, he was at the Oklahoma Constitutional Convention and was one of the people that pushed for statehood in Oklahoma as against it remaining Indian territory.
And you're working for the Indians now, officially, aren't you?
I'm now assistant to the Commissioner of Indian Affairs, Bob Bennett, a very good friend of mine and my wife's. Bob Bennett, incidentally, is an Indian boy. He's the first Indian commissioner in about 100 years, and a very knowledgeable man.
What have you done so far in your new capacity, Will?
Well, Bob has had me all over the lot. I've been up in Alaska. I was up there last month. And last week, I was down at the bottom of the Grand Canyon at the Havasupai Reservation. I'm going back out again in a week to Arizona to take a look at the Mojaves there. And I kind of go around in areas where the commissioner can't go and other people can't go, and there is some question come up, so I just go out there and make a report.
What is the situation in Alaska? What did you find with the Indians up there?
I found that the worst a situation that I have ever seen of any group of people under the American flag. It is not the fault of the state, which doesn't have the money, and maybe not even the federal government or we ourselves.
Because the Alaskan natives are just moving out of a hunting and fishing culture into a cash economy culture. Just the worst possible time for any people to do it. And they live in these poor houses. They huddle all together. There'll be 8 and 10 in a room. And there's no light, no electricity, no running water. They have to go out and heat the water. In the Bethel area, there are 15,000 Eskimos. A survey was made. There was only one bed for every four people. So that means they're all sleeping together and huddled together on the bed, on the floor, all around in these little shacks. It gets dark over there. They're very early. Say it's dark by 2 or 3 in the afternoon, and there's sun up until about 8 or 9 in the morning, just a few hours of daylight. And they must huddle there in darkness for an awful long time.
What would you like to see done now that you've seen the situation?
I think we've got to have a human resources development bill for Alaska to the tune of about $100 to $200 million of the following priorities. 1, light to each one of these villages. 2, at least one source of running water to each one of these villages. And 3, an airport next to each one of these villages. Most of them have them, but they're still too dinky for people to get in and out. And 4, against erosion from the rivers, which wash away these villages quite often.
And what about schools and education?
Well, the schools and education we have, and that would not be part of this big mass. We have fairly good schools where we have them. We just don't have enough of them. Their population has been increasing more rapidly than we anticipated or are able to take care of.
Is it true that you adopted a Navajo child?
Oh, Clem, yes, my boy, my pride and joy. I might see if he'll listen in. He's down in Tucson, Arizona, going to the University of Arizona there. He's a full-blood Navajo boy. He's 6 years old. He was a little sheep herder way out on the Navajo reservation.
Is he an orphan?
And he was a little orphan boy. And we knew the school teacher. And there was this little bright-eyed little boy running around the school and everything. And we asked if he'd join our family. And he said he would. And he's been my son and my pride and joy ever since.
What is he doing now?
Well, he's going to the University of Arizona. And he's going into the police department there.
Is he going back to the reservation?
I don't think he will for quite some time. I think he'll want to first stay with the police department in Tucson, get some more training. And I don't think the people back at the reservation like young people to come back directly out of college.
Oh, really?
They prefer to have older, 30 or 40-year-old people, yes, you see.
Smart alecky or what?
Yes, I think so, yes. Because you don't want a young guy, even though he may have had all this fine training, to tell you how to behave around there.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas they would accept suggestions from older people.
We hear a lot of, false reports about the Indians. I heard just the other day that Indians can't vote. Now, this is erroneous, isn't it?
Oh, Lord. The problem is to get them to vote. I've been everywhere I go, I tell them, I say, now, look, you have got to register, you have got to vote if you're going to get any political power in this country. Oh, of course they could register and vote just like anyone else. I think we think of them as restricted because their land, their tribal land,
yes,
the property is trust land, and they don't have to pay tax on it. That's to their advantage, and they want to keep that advantage, too. But on their person, they can go anywhere.
We've been talking with Will Rogers, Jr., who looks exactly like Will Rogers and sounds like him and his dear. He is now the assistant to the Commissioner of the Bureau of Indian Affairs. This is Betty Grobley for Monitor.
Will Rogers, Jr., just as enthusiastic an American as his father was. Here's Marilyn May to sing with Sonny.
Sonny, yesterday my life was filled with rain.
Shine.
19 minutes past the hour. You're 1 minute away from a song by Al Martino here on the Monitor Beacon.
There's something very remarkable about Ronzoni spaghetti, macaroni, and egg noodles. You could serve it every day, every week, every month for a whole year, and never serve the same thing twice. No wonder Ronzoni is the favorite brand of people who know spaghetti and macaroni best. It's practically their favorite food. The Ronzoni slogan pretty much sums the whole thing up. Ronzoni sono buoni. Ronzoni is so good. Every day, every week.
The Conversation Station, WNBC, New York. A Voice in the Choir on Monica and Al Martino sings it. Five-cent stamps are going out of style as of tonight at midnight, and you'll be buying six-cent stamps to mail a regular letter and 10-cent stamps for airmail within the country. Maybe you bought some already. If you're a stamp collector, you probably have. Larry Gaffney of NBC News, Washington, interviewed Mrs. Virginia Brizendine, director of the Division of Philately, United States Post Office Department. The subject, naturally, the new stamps.
Mrs. Brizendine, tell us something about what these look like. Describe these stamps for us.
The 6 cent Roosevelt stamp was issued as a part of the Prominent American Series in 1966. It's a brown stamp. It's signed by Dick Clark of New York. And it's based on a photograph that was made a day after President Roosevelt and Winston Churchill signed the Atlantic Charter.
So that particular stamp is not a new stamp on the scene?
No, not in sheet form. We have had it for over a year now.
What about the 10-cent airmail? What's it look like?
It is a red background, as are all domestic airmail stamps. 50 white flags, symbolic type design, very striking, blue feel.
How many stamps of these particular kinds are you turning out in this first run?
Oh, about 8 billion.
8 billion?
8 billion to get ready, yes.
Now, how long might this first run be expected to last?
Well, indefinitely. We're printing night and day, 24 hours a day. They are printing here at the Bureau. And it will go on indefinitely. We will need about 24 billion stamps next year, as we do in former years, as we have in former years.
Well, are you saying then that the Bureau of Engraving and Printing turns out about 24 billion stamps a year?
Yes, that's right.
That is a lot of stamps. Since an imperfect stamp, imperfectly printed, probably worth a lot of money, what efforts are made to assure quality control in their printing?
Well, all these stamps in the Bureau are examined at least 5 times before they go out. And on the multicolor, we have various mechanical equipment to detect any variation to ensure that the stamp won't go in upside down or something to create an error.
What's the most outstanding example you can think of a wrongly printed stamp?
Well, we always think of the 1918 inverted airmail.
What happened there?
The center was upside down. The plane is upside down.
That didn't fly too well, that
was. That stamp catalog is now for about $18,000, and a plate block for $100,000. There's only one pane of those out, got out.
How long ago did the last stamp goof-up occur?
1962 on the Dag Hammer Show. There was a matter of two sheets going through the press the wrong way, and it resulted in an inverted plate number and also space around the United Nations building. And the Postmaster General at that time decided to counteract that error by printing millions of errors. So,
I seem to remember he made a few collectors unhappy.
That's true. He printed about 120 million right side up and about 40 million wrong side up. Some collectors were unhappy. Some thought it was a very good thing to do.
Does the Post Office Department ever get many complaints or suggestions about the glue on postage stamps?
The gum, you mean? Well, we get various suggestions. The most usual one is that we flavor the gum, peppermint, various flavors. Occasionally, we have complaints of stamps not sticking, and usually that's due to the stamps being over-moistened or improper pressure put on the stamp to make it adhere to the envelope.
We've been talking with Mrs. Virginia Brissendine, Director of the Division of Philately, U.S. Post Office Department in Washington. This is Larry Gaffney, NBC News in Washington, for Monitor.
Well, stamps have come a long way since the penny black, haven't they, huh? As any collector knows, that was the very first postage stamp printed in England and bearing the picture of Queen Victoria. And because England invented postage stamps, she's the only country that does not print the name of the country anywhere on the stamp. For my last bit of information, this reminder, starting tomorrow, put 6 cents of postage on a regular letter. Things by the Artie Kornfeld Circus. In Idaho, you've been listening to us on KIBO. Wherever you listen, I hope you plan to join us again next Saturday evening. By us, I mean Monica and me, Ted Steele.
This is your NBC.